This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome to episode number 16 of the Until the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Myers. This is my second podcast of the new year. I'm thinking until we get maybe into the meat of the summer, or latter part of the summer rather, I may just do an episode every other week. Still trying to kind of figure out some of the best way to present some of the content that I'm thinking of. I still do have some interviews in mind, but I'm kind of working on a structure for them a little bit. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, I wouldn't really call myself a creative. And while I talk sports all day, every day, it's kind of different when you're, you know, quote unquote, hosting your own show and, you know, needing to produce content. So I have a great amount of respect for, you know, all the writers out there, the podcasters, especially the other guys that are doing stuff here on the Yak, Ketch, Jason Sukuma, Anwar, Dustin, you know, all those guys. Just because it's not the easiest thing to do, man. I mean, you would think it'd be pretty easy to just sit up and shoot the shit, but at this time of the year, there's not a ton going on, especially with, the, you know, National Signing Day process having changed. But this week, you know, there was a number of things that have happened, even leading up to, you know, me recording this podcast on a Thursday night. Some stuff popped up a couple hours ago that we'll get into around the quarterback conversation. But, you know, figured I'd just touch on kind of what I've been up to in the last couple of weeks. So one of the things that I did while I was in New Orleans, and really ever since Christmas, man, is I've just been eating like total crap. And when I say total crap, for the most part, I don't eat a ton of fast food, don't eat a ton of sweets. But, you know, I was just kind of telling myself, ever since Christmas, you know what, I just want to enjoy some good food. And so if there was a sandwich I wanted, I ate it. I'm typically not even one that eats a whole lot of bread. But if there was something fried, I was down in it. You name it, like whatever I could kind of get my hands on. I spent a good chunk of my Christmas vacation. My company does a shutdown for about a week to 10 days or so around the Christmas holiday. So I spent a good amount of it in Dallas. And there's some places that I really like in the Dallas area that I used to frequent when I lived up there. So I made it a point to kind of get back around to all of them. And then I knew I was going to be in New Orleans for New Year's. So I wanted to consume as many po' boys as I could. Beignets are okay. You know, they don't really do it for me the way they do it for some. But I did have some beignets while I was there. Did a lot of drinking. And I basically just kind of wrecked my body. So I told myself that even when I came back to Austin, I guess that was like, oh, gosh, out back after the game. So the week of, you know, that week of New Year's. So I guess December 31st all the way through like Sunday, January 6th. I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to keep eating. I'm going to find all the good stuff that I want in Austin. It sounds funny. One of those things, you know, I was like even diving back to stuff that I used to eat in like high school. So my brother had come to town and me and him went and got a Thundercloud sub. I had a craving for Shortstop. You know, I used to love the burger place Shortstop. So I went and got a bacon cheeseburger from there. One night I wanted, God, I don't know, must have been Pluckers or something, but I wanted like the fried pickles. And I mean, you name it, I was eating it. And my body was letting me know, like, bro, you kind of tripping here. So I told myself that starting on Monday, January 7th, I was going to go on a juice fast or kind of like a juicing fast. I guess that's the best way to describe it. So I found a company here in Austin that makes all these different juices, and you know, they're, you know, heavy vegetable content in them, along with fruit. A couple of them were spicy, but they're designed to just kind of flush everything out of you. So I drank 6 juices a day for a week. And man, when I tell you, like, my taste buds were like craving the weirdest things. And everywhere I went, it just seemed like there was good food and I couldn't eat it. I was at my parents' house and, they were eating dinner and I was over here trying to chug back these juices. And I kind of did it in conjunction with some stuff that, you know, a lot of people at my church, or, you know, different churches across the country start out the year during the Daniel fast. So I kind of thought of it, you know, from a somewhat of a spiritual standpoint, I could use it as like a cleanse in that regard. And I was able to make it through the week and then, you know, ended up breaking the fast last Monday or this past Monday. And so one of the things I was just looking forward to was eggs. Like I love a good breakfast, love a good scrambled egg. And so I had gone to Costco this past Sunday and bought, you know, all the stuff that I wanted for the week, because ultimately the point of it was to kind of flush all the bad stuff out and then just start putting good stuff back in. So I'm flirting around with the idea of doing keto, because I've heard, you know, a number of people speak highly of it and their results on it. You know, I've just noticed that I've just put on weight that I don't need. You know, I'm not playing football anymore. I'm not taking on blockers, or I'm not, you know, the blocker anymore from my days as a fullback. So just trying to live a little bit healthier. So I've just been, you know, eating eggs and, you know, kind of sauteing some mushrooms and onions and that kind of stuff in the morning, to scramble up in my eggs for lunch. Been eating a big salad. And then, typically for dinner, been eating some kind of salad too. But this past Monday night, I had a craving for hot wings. And so, I got the Cajun hot wings from Wingstop, ate those for dinner. And, you know, every other night this week, just been eating on, you know, different lean cuts of meat. And then, you know, either sauteing some spinach or chopping up spinach and kale and making another salad out of it. I've been eating a lot of avocado because I've heard, you know, on keto that that's a good thing to do. And so basically just trying to cut out all the processed foods, you know, sugars, that kind of thing. And so I'm having some moderate success with it so far. I'm not sure if I really even have my body in the ketosis stage, as they call it, just yet, but that's what, you know, my week has consisted of. And then just trying to kind of keep a tab on the sports world. You know, it's weird for me because the thing that I pay closest attention to is Texas football. Second to that is probably NFL football, but you know, at two different levels. One, I'm a big fantasy football player, so I kind of pay attention to you know, the league from the fantasy football landscape. And then when fantasy football season ends after week 16, I kind of, you know, look around and at that point really start paying attention to, okay, what are teams really doing in the league? As a Cowboys fan, we're out of it. So, you know, so long for that. I'm not a big NBA fan. You know, I typically watch in the playoffs. I certainly don't really watch or even really start paying attention to storylines until like after All-Star weekend. So still have a little while before that, you know, occurs. And so that just leaves us kind of like with, you know, trying to follow a little bit of what's going on in recruiting from the National Signing Day 2 standpoint. And then now with, you know, what we're having to deal with in the way of a QB carousel. So, you know, you have the transfer portal, and it just so happens the way things have shaken out with us that 3 of the quarterbacks that were on the roster this past year have all entered themselves into the transfer portal now. Shane Buechel alerted the staff yesterday that he wanted to go ahead and throw his name in the hat, and kind of makes sense. So I can understand that. He's an upperclassman. I think with him redshirting this year, he still has 2 years of eligibility. So if he goes ahead and graduates in May, then, you know, he can transfer to the program of his choice and compete for a starting position, right away. And, so, you know, fully expects him to do that. This afternoon saw that Cameron Rising sent out a tweet, and it was kind of interesting. You know, I guess it's just this social media age that's really like still kind of getting me, that, you know, I just can't get behind the way, you know, these kids do what it is they do. But he tweeted out, "I can't change the direction of the wind, but I can adjust my sails to always reach my destination. Go Utes." And then there's a picture of him, you know, that says he signed with the Utah Utes. So Cameron Rising's gone. And then yesterday a story broke that Casey Thompson was going to be staying with the program. Well, today he puts out a tweet and it says, "I shouldn't have to do this, but I haven't made a decision and the reports did not come from me. I hate finding out news from Twitter and so should any coach. That's not the right way to do things. It's unprofessional. I like to inform and be informed myself." Deleting this tweet. So sounds like, you know, of course, the early speculation was that Casey Thompson would be the one that would now go ahead and stay with the program. And then that would leave you with Sam, Casey Thompson, and then incoming freshman and early enrollee in Roshan Johnson. But it sounds like Casey's saying that, you know, maybe it's not the case yet. Now, I'm hopeful that cooler heads prevail and in the end he makes the decision to go ahead and stick it out. I think it's just something different about this generation. I can't say I blame them, you know, in a sport that you know, sees coaches leave all the time with no penalty and then just kind of leaving their kids at the altar. I mean, you just look, Manny Diaz, you know, had made a commitment to Temple, you know, players signing, and then, you know, days later, the Miami job becomes available in a relatively unexpected fashion, and he was gone from a job that, you know, he didn't even hold for a month. And, you know, for the most part, no one blames him. There's no, you know, ill feelings held towards him, and yet, when a kid wants to transfer for whatever his reasoning may be, you know, until this transfer portal came up, it was a little more difficult and, you know, often came with restrictions. Certainly comes with, you know, the having to sit out a year if you're transferring at the same level. And so a lot of it goes into play. But now with this transfer portal, you know, it's kind of like the new Wild Wild West of sorts. You know, there's no limitations into how long these guys can stay at. Anwar did a really good job in one of his Yak podcasts of breaking down, you know, some of the information that he had received from the NCAA regarding the transfer portal. But effectively, there's no limit on the number of times a guy can enter himself into the portal. So I think once you've entered into the portal, you stay in it for a year until that year is either expired or you remove yourself. But then after that, if you want to put yourself right back in it, you can. And so what you're starting to see now is people try to use loopholes. So you had Tate Martell from Ohio State transfer to Miami. You had Justin Fields, the quarterback from Georgia, transfer from Georgia to Ohio State. And then most recently, which we'll probably talk some about on this episode as well, Jalen Hurts transfer from Alabama to OU. And what you're seeing in some of these situations is guys are trying to, you know, basically hire their own legal teams to find loopholes in, you know, I guess the NCAA bylaws, for lack of a better phrase, that would potentially grant them immediate eligibility. And so, you know, that just kind of changes the entire landscape of things. You know, I can't say what the long-term effects of this is. I think from a player standpoint, there's no true downside to it, right? I mean, you put yourself out there, you see what bites, you know, take a look at the competition and that kind of thing. If you got to, you know, a school and it wasn't quite what you thought it was going to be, you potentially have an avenue to redirect, you know, the course of your remaining time in college. I just think, you know, as a true freshman, it's probably a little bit quick to pull the trigger on that. But when you look at a situation like Texas, you know, coming into this season, and I think one of the ways they were able to sign both Cameron Rising and Casey Thompson was, you know, probably selling them on, like, look, we don't know if Sam's the guy. You know, he showed some flashes last year for sure. But there were, you know, some moments where you certainly questioned his decision making, questioned his ability to throw the ball. And so, you know, that was probably something that Tom Herman used on the recruiting trail to let these guys know, hey, you potentially have an opportunity to come in here and compete. And, you know, as the summer played out, or I guess as spring ball played out, the summer and then subsequently, you know, the season, it just became more and more evident that Sam was the guy and that these guys, you know, barring him getting injured, just really weren't going to see the field. And so I guess it was one of those things where they kind of took a look at the landscape and said, hey, you know, I don't really want to wait my time. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if with both Casey Thompson and Cameron Rising, who's the only one right now who's officially gone. It'll be interesting to see what they do. It'll be interesting to see if Cameron Rising, you know, applies for some kind of waiver that would allow him to be able to play immediately, because if these type of situations are granted, it opens Pandora's box, you know, because we're talking about quarterbacks, but that just so happens to be the problem, you know, currently. I mean, what do you do when, you know, a kid comes through and looks and realizes that the DB, you know, DB room is loaded for the next few years, and guys like, you know, B.J. Foster and Caden Stearns and Demario Overshone, you know, Anthony Cook, Deshaun Jameson getting moved back to the defensive side of the ball, Jalen Green, who was a favorite of mine when he was coming out. Those guys are all young. So what do you do as these new classes come in? Maybe they get in for a year or so. They look around and say, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to play for a while here. And one of the things that I've said that really helps a team to kind of reach that elite level is being able to stack quality depth on top of one another so that you can have more and more guys redshirt, make it more and more make it more and more the, you don't want it to be the norm that your true freshmen are playing. And you want to give them an opportunity to redshirt and develop. Well, now with these new transfer rules, coaches are going to have to be, you know, very strategic about how they do that, because depending on what kind of depth is there sitting ahead of them, how young that depth is, and or the impact that depth has made could really start to impact these guys' decisions. And it's a tough thing for me because, like I said, from the player standpoint, I get it. That being said, if it were me, I can't see myself really wanting to do it. When I got to Texas, you know, some of the bonds that I formed with my teammates were so strong that I just couldn't see myself, you know, really wanting to leave and go somewhere else. And I guess, you know, there's always the opportunity for more playing time. But going into every season, you kind of thought, all right, you know, I really want to do everything I can in the offseason to grind this out, give myself the best opportunity to compete. And sometimes the way the cookie crumbles is the guys in front of you are just better than you. And, you know, I'm 34 now, so I can look back and say that, you know, at the time, you don't believe anybody's better than you. For the most part, you believe that you have the ability to go out there and compete, or at least you should go out there and compete at a high level. You've been preparing us alongside, you know, the guys that are starting and everything like that. So it's a tough situation to be in. But like for myself, you know, I started out at linebacker and was backing up Derek Johnson. Well, Derek Johnson was an absolute stud. So unless he got hurt, which, you know, friend of mine, so I'm glad that he never did. But the odds of me seeing in the field were slim to none. And at least, you know, from a defensive standpoint. And then I flipped over to the offensive side of the ball after we went through a couple of defensive coordinators, played some fullback, but the guy that was starting at fullback for us was Ahmad Hall. We somewhat were phasing the fullback out of our offense, in what it was that we were running. So, you know, I ended up playing a lot of special teams, but, you know, I kind of reached a level of maturity with myself that I was somewhat content with that. I was happy with, you know, the journey that I was on, the people I was meeting, the experiences, the education that I was getting. You know, I was one that never really allowed The academic staff would just pick classes for me. I knew I wanted to do, you know, a number of things academically and had some goals that I wanted to achieve. So, you know, I always, you know, was one to set my own schedule and ended up graduating with a degree in economics. But I guess I say all that to say I was happy with my experience at Texas. And I don't think if the transfer portal were open to me, is it something that I would have, you know, necessarily utilized? But I just feel like a lot of it comes from this new age of kid, you know, and I call them kids because they are, you know, coming out of high school, they're 17, 18 years old, sometimes 16. And they grew up in this social media age where everything is about attention, 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 and just kind of showing off, you know, the best sides of, you know, what it is that you have going on. But, you know, like I said, I think they're just used to a different paradigm. And there's, you know, some negatives that come with it. In case in point, the situation with Casey Thompson, you know, he's reading reports online about him all being set to come back. And from his tweet today, it sounds like he's still conflicted. You know, it sounds like were he to have reached a decision, he would want to be the one to share that with Tom Herman and the staff first and not have it reported elsewhere. So it's kind of difficult. And, you know, I think people, you know, do a great job, especially Anwar. Someone told me somewhere that I guess on some of the sourcing that at least with the Casey Thompson piece, that Chip Brown was the one that broke that, saying that he had indicated he was returning. I'm not really clear on who does what, and I'm never good at, you know, how that comes about. But ultimately, it was communicated through social media that Casey was coming back. And, you know, while I think that certainly would be the right decision for him to make, he would be, you know, more than likely the unquestioned backup. And you know, I mean, let's face it, with a guy like Sam, health is going to be an issue for him. I mean, going back to high school, he's always banged up. And I think it just kind of comes with his style of play. I think along with that, though, I think the coaching staff could do a better job of protecting him by getting the running game going and really relying on, you know, the running backs a little bit more. But, you know, I hate the comparisons, but effectively he is Tebow Light. I mean, he, you know, runs around out there. He bangs into people. You know, bounce off of him. And we use him a lot in the run game, especially in, you know, short yardage and goal line situations. And, he does a great job, you know, of picking up tough yards, but it's going to happen. If he continues, you know, to play the way he plays, he's going to miss a quarter here and there. He's probably going to miss a couple of games. And so those would be opportunities, you know, for someone like Casey Thompson to step right in. I think Roschon Johnson, with him coming in, you know, I've heard him say all the right things, and he seems like he's one that, you know, is probably willing to be a little more patient. You know, if Sam has a big year, he could potentially be in conversation, you know, to come out as a pro. And I think that's something that we have to be prepared for. Not necessarily saying that that's what's going to happen, but it's certainly a possibility. If not, then, you know, he is in his senior year. Roschon Johnson is, you know, hopefully a in his redshirt freshman year, because I fully expect him to redshirt this year. So, you know, I think the quarterback room still has an opportunity to, you know, be okay. I really do. You know, I guess I wish selfishly that Cameron Rising had stayed, you know, for the depth of the program. But in seeing how, you know, Tom Herman likes to run his offenses and how Sam is used, Cam is not, you know, by all accounts, Cameron Rising is not that type of quarterback. He doesn't fit the system as well as Casey Thompson, as well as Roschon Johnson. Even though all reports were that, you know, he was ahead of Casey Thompson, you know, through the fall camp for the most part. So, again, it's always just reporting. You're not in the room, so you don't really know what to believe. But, you know, best wishes to those young men. Certainly more to come. I kind of expect Shane to end up going to somewhere, maybe like an SMU or something. He certainly has an opportunity to put up, you know, some numbers in the right system, but he just seems like a guy that wants to, you know, go out and compete. And, you know, in his last year of eligibility, let's face it, without Sam, you know, knock on wood, being injured, Shane's just not going to see a lot of time. So, you know, like I said, I referenced Jalen Hurts to OU, and that has been the big national talking point. And, you know, I'm trying to keep an open mind about it. You know, I've just never been a big Jalen Hurts truther. I know he's done a lot of things while being in the SEC, but I'm certainly one of those guys that believes that, you know, the SEC defenses are as great as they are because a lot of the offenses in the SEC are trash. And you've seen, you know, kind of what happens sometimes in these bowl games where they end up having to face real quarterbacks, for lack of a better word. And, you know, with Texas beating Georgia, with Clemson beating Alabama, and the fashion in which both did so, you know, it sometimes leads me to believe that, you know, maybe some of their upper echelon quarterbacks aren't all that they're cracked up to be. But Jalen Hurts certainly have skins on the wall, and he will give OU someone that you can plug in there immediately and do some nice things with. You know, I think it's worth pointing out that the offense will be different than what we've seen in the past with, you know, Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield. I personally believe that, you know, it won't be as prolific, but with Lincoln Riley running the show, I think he'll craft an offense that will fit around Jalen's strengths. And so it'll be interesting to see. You know, it certainly puts them right there at the top of the Big 12 again. And not having to rely on a true freshman in Spencer Rattler. And it just kind of goes to show you, you know, there was a quote from Spencer Rattler, that the OU signee that just signed there, who recently had said, you know, before the Hurts news, that, you know, the coaching staff at OU had assured him that basically they weren't going to be taking any transfers anytime soon, that he would be the only quarterback in the class of 2019 effectively. And my, how quickly those things change, right? And so, you know, again, here's another example of how I can't really be mad at kids using the portal, because sometimes these coaches will say anything in order to secure a commitment, keep a guy from looking around, especially with, you know, other schools in their ear and saying, hey, you know, haven't you heard about this or that? And I don't think it's done with malice. I think the coaches are doing what they think is best for the program. And if you have someone like a Jalen Hurts that's interested in coming to your program, and you've had someone like Kyler Murray just leave, all you really have left in the cupboard is a true freshman, because your backup quarterback put himself in the transport portal and is wanting to transfer to West Virginia. I'm forgetting his name. I want to say it's maybe Austin Robinson, but don't quote me on that. But he, you know, seemingly on his way to West Virginia. You can't pass up, you know, a talent like Jalen Hurts. And so, you know, OU certainly loses a lot, but hell, they had 3 5-star wide receivers in this class alone, you know, and that, you know, goes into addition of a guy like a CeeDee Lamb that they already had coming back. So it'll be interesting to see what the offense is like. I think one of the things to keep in mind is that, you know, Baker and Kyler Murray did some things with a hyper level of efficiency that I just don't know we've seen from Jalen Hurts. It certainly doesn't mean that he is not capable of producing the same, but, you know, I certainly put him more in the elk of, you know, like the Sams of the world than I would a true thrower in Kyler or Baker. But, you know, you'll probably see a different form of the OU offense this year. But one that's still prolific, one that, you know, being led by Lincoln Riley, you can be guaranteed will still be able to move the ball up and down the field and put up points. And so it'll be interesting. You know, I'm already looking forward to the matchup of Sam versus Hurts when we get to the Red River rivalry, Red River shootout. Hell, I don't call it the Red River rivalry. That's a mouthful as it is. You see, I'm sitting here stumbling over it. So, you know, I think, you know, what we're seeing in the landscape of college football, especially at the quarterback position, is going to continue to evolve. Things are going to continue to change. Guys are going to continue to find ways to work the system to their advantage because, let's face it, these guys are still severely underpaid with respect to the amount of money they bring in for their programs. And they're going to do things that they feel are best for them. And so I think for the first time in a long time, this transfer portal is kind of giving them some of their power back and giving them an opportunity to take advantage of, you know, a system that we all are a game that we all love, but a system that is somewhat flawed and leaves, you know, a significant amount to be desired from the player end, I would say. So it'll be interesting to see how things unfold, you know, especially after the second national signing day takes place. One of the other things I always watch is after that, where do coaches go? You always see a flood of assistant coaches taking other jobs that were, you know, more or less just kind of hanging on to be, you know, I guess good stewards to the university they were currently at, but, you know, somewhat misguiding the athletes that they're recruiting that, you know, will never actually even get to be coached by them. I think, you know, that's happened at Texas once or twice, and you certainly see it across the country. And so, you know, it's something that I think players will continue to try to use as a loophole to be able to get out of letters of intent, and especially with this transfer portal, be able to go elsewhere and play right away. So that's kind of all I have for this week. You know, yet another kind of quick 30 minutes there. Once you get rolling, it isn't as bad, and time does certainly fly, but you know, thank you again for just listening, for giving your feedback. I had a listener give some feedback on, you know, maybe some people that they'd like to hear interviewed. And so I'm going to see what I can do to try to make some of that happen. But just, you know, really appreciate you guys for listening, giving me this platform, particularly the guys at the Yak. Thank y'all for everything that you do. And for allowing us to continue to push this stuff out. So with that, again, I'm your host, Marcus Myers. This has been another episode of Until the Whistle, and I will catch you the next time the whistle blows.